On a misty morning in March of 2018, a family's perfect image shattered at the bottom of a 100-foot cliff in Mendocino County. Two mothers, six adopted children, trapped inside an SUV plunged intentionally toward the unforgiving ocean below. Behind viral smiles and staged photographs lurked a dark, haunting truth of manipulation, abuse, and deception. I'm Emma Richards, and I lived just steps away from the Hart family, yet failed to see the warnings until it was too late. This isn't just their story, it's mine and ours. A story of guilt, secrets, and how silence can become the deadliest betrayal of all. Welcome to the Murder Tape Chronicles audiobook. If you haven't already, please consider following us on your favorite podcast platform. Today we present to you The Cliff Crash Murder-Suicide. Let's dive into this thrilling narrative together. Chapter 1, Picture Perfect Lie. It's strange how vividly certain memories remain etched in your mind, clear as day, undiluted by the passage of time or the cruelty of fading recollections. For me, that day, March 26, 2018, will always hold an unsettling permanence, a chilling clarity that refuses to soften with each passing year. But to understand the gravity of what unfolded that terrible morning, you must first grasp the beautifully constructed lie we all believed, the illusion of perfection meticulously woven by Jennifer and Sarah Hart. My name is Emma Richards, and I lived three houses down from the Hart family, in a quiet suburban neighborhood just outside Portland, Oregon. Our street was a postcard of idyllic Americana, lined with towering oak trees whose branches gently arched over the sidewalks, shading pristine lawns dotted with bicycles and soccer balls. It was the kind of community where neighbors greeted each other warmly. Children played openly in cul-de-sacs, and block parties filled summer evenings with laughter and the smell of sizzling burgers. When Jennifer and Sarah first moved into the spacious blue house with white trim, their arrival was met with enthusiasm and open arms. Here were two women who embodied the idealistic vision of modern parenting, progressive, loving, and generously devoted. With them were six adopted children, each distinct in personality, yet harmoniously blended into what seemed like the perfect family unit. The neighborhood welcomed them eagerly, enchanted by their generosity, charm, and community spirit. I recall our first meeting vividly. Jennifer Hart knocked on my door, her smile broad and confident, accompanied by the faint scent of lavender perfume. Standing beside her was Sarah, slightly quieter, but with gentle warmth in her eyes that immediately put you at ease. Jennifer enthusiastically introduced themselves and their family: Marcus, Hannah, Devontae, Abigail, Jeremiah, and Sierra, all beautiful, polite children whose shy waves and bright eyes hinted at both curiosity and caution. I invited them in, offered them cookies freshly baked, and felt an instant connection. In the weeks that followed, the Hart family quickly became the heartbeat of our neighborhood. Jennifer was charismatic and engaging, effortlessly organizing community events and volunteering at school fundraisers. Sarah, quieter yet deeply thoughtful, often spent afternoons gardening in their front yard, inviting neighborhood children to plant flowers with her. Their adopted kids soon became inseparable from our own children, creating bonds of friendship forged through weekend sleepovers, backyard soccer matches, and lazy afternoons spent reading books beneath shady trees. Social media was a significant part of Jennifer's life. Her posts were regular, artful, and heartwarming, captivating snapshots of hikes through lush Oregon forests, beach adventures along windswept shores, or spontaneous road trips that took them across the country. The photos painted an enviable life, each carefully curated image brimming with love, joy, and vibrant optimism. Jennifer's captions would often read like poetry, profound yet relatable, weaving stories that inspired hundreds, then thousands, as her followers multiplied. One photograph, in particular, catapulted their family into viral fame. It was of young Devontae, his expressive face tear-streaked, arms wrapped around a Portland police officer at a Black Lives Matter protest. The image was shared millions of times, turning Devontae, and by extension the Hart family, into symbols of hope, love, and unity amid a fractured society. News outlets celebrated them, interviews and features followed, and Jennifer took it all in stride, modestly redirecting the praise to their philosophy of openness and empathy. From the outside looking in, theirs was the epitome of familial perfection. Yet beneath this carefully crafted image lay small cracks that were easy to overlook. I remember the first time something fell off. It was a quiet Sunday afternoon in late autumn, the kind where the air is crisp and leaves carpeted sidewalks in shades of amber and red. I was outside raking my lawn when I heard a soft rustle behind the wooden fence separating our yards. To my surprise, Hannah Hart, only 9 at the time, climbed shakily over the barrier. Her movements were urgent, her eyes wide and wary as if she expected to be caught at any moment. "Hey, Hannah, everything okay?" I asked gently, noting her anxious gaze darting toward her house. "Can I stay here with you for a while?" she whispered, her voice trembling slightly. It wasn't the playful tone of a child's innocent escape, it was something else, something darker. "Of course, sweetie," I replied cautiously, noticing how pale and frail she seemed, her clothes hanging loosely from her thin frame. I guided her inside, preparing a quick peanut butter sandwich and offering her some milk. She ate hungrily, almost desperately, and avoided my questioning gaze. After a few moments, Hannah spoke quietly, barely audible. "I don't want to go back," she murmured, eyes downcast, shoulders hunched protectively inward. Alarm bells softly rang in my mind, but just as quickly as they appeared, they were silenced by the sound of my doorbell ringing. Jennifer stood outside, her normally vibrant eyes clouded by frustration masked with a strained smile. "Hannah bothering you again?" She laughed awkwardly, reaching for her daughter's arm. Her grip seemed too firm, too quick. "She's no bother at all," I assured her gently, trying to meet Hannah's gaze, but she kept her eyes to the ground. Jennifer thanked me curtly, almost dismissively, and led Hannah away without another word. That evening, the unsettling encounter replayed itself relentlessly in my mind, leaving a gnawing unease in my stomach. Yet still, I hesitated. Perhaps it was nothing, perhaps I was imagining things. After all, Jennifer and Sarah seemed like such exemplary parents. Their children were always smiling on Facebook, their faces alight with happiness and adventure. Who was I to question them based on one ambiguous interaction? Months later, a similar incident amplified my doubts. Marcus knocked timidly at my door one chilly evening, his thin frame trembling, his voice hushed and hesitant. "Miss Emma," he whispered nervously, eyes wide and imploring, "can we borrow some food? Just some bread or something. I promise I'll pay you back." "Of course, sweetheart," I answered, startled by the urgency in his voice and the haunted expression in his eyes. As I handed him a bag filled with sandwiches and snacks, Marcus whispered a quiet thank you before disappearing quickly into the dusk. That evening, dread coiled in my chest as I struggled to reconcile the joyful images Jennifer shared online with the reality I'd glimpsed in those children's frightened eyes. Soon after, I started to notice the Hart family's gradual withdrawal. They stopped attending neighborhood events, their curtains remained drawn, and the children rarely played outside. Whispered rumors began circulating that Child Protective Services had visited their home, checking on concerns raised by anonymous tips about abuse and neglect. Each new revelation filled me with guilt, regret, and confusion. Had I failed these children by remaining silent? The Hart family's idyllic online facade remained intact to the outside world, yet the troubling signs behind closed doors multiplied. I resolved several times to confront them, rehearsing careful questions in my mind, only to abandon the idea at the last minute. Fear of misjudgment and confrontation paralyzed me into silence, something I would come to deeply regret. Then, suddenly, without warning, their home fell silent and empty overnight. Lights were left off, the driveway vacant, and their social media posts abruptly stopped. Concerned neighbors murmured their fears, speculating anxiously about what might have happened, while unease wrapped its icy fingers around our community. It was as if the Hart family had simply vanished, taking with them a story none of us fully understood, leaving behind only a haunting silence that hinted at secrets far darker than we had imagined. A silence, I soon discovered, that would be shattered by an unimaginable tragedy, revealing the heartbreaking truth behind their picture-perfect lie. Chapter 2, Cracks in the Canvas. The weeks that followed the unsettling disappearance of the Hart family from our quiet Oregon neighborhood felt like a disorienting blur of unanswered questions and whispered speculations. Every morning, I found myself staring across the empty driveway toward their silent house, curtains still tightly drawn, mailbox overflowing with untouched letters. It was as if the home itself was holding its breath, frozen in anticipation of something terrible yet to come. Sleep had become increasingly elusive. Late at night, I'd sit alone at my kitchen table, bathed in the pale glow of my laptop screen, scrolling through Jennifer Hart's meticulously curated social media accounts. Images upon images of smiling children stared back at me, perfectly filtered and captioned with eloquent reflections on family, love, and kindness. Yet beneath each heartwarming post lurked an unsettling sense of artificiality, as though the bright smiles concealed something darker, something carefully hidden behind an impenetrable mask of digital perfection. My obsession with their online presence quickly intensified. One evening, as rain softly tapped against my windows, I discovered Jennifer's lengthy Facebook posts detailing her philosophies on parenting and compassion. Each entry was eloquent, filled with poetic descriptions of their seemingly idyllic family life, shared with thousands of followers who responded with endless praise and admiration. Yet each post seemed designed not only to inspire but also to deflect, to obscure and divert attention from the uncomfortable realities that whispered behind closed doors. The more I scrolled, the clearer patterns began to emerge. Jennifer's narratives, always glowing, idealized, and devoid of imperfection, painted a family utterly without flaw. Their children were depicted as eternally grateful, cheerful, and obedient, attributes Jennifer consistently praised and attributed to their loving parenting style. It was as if she was not just celebrating her family, but meticulously constructing a protective barrier, one that no outsider could easily penetrate with doubt or suspicion. My unease deepened when I stumbled upon Jennifer's increasingly political and performative activism online. She frequently posted bold statements about social justice, empathy, and community engagement. Photos showed her children at protests holding signs, often at the forefront, their young faces earnest and committed. But as I gazed closer, those images began to feel staged and choreographed, the authenticity eroding with every prolonged glance. Behind each photograph, I now wondered about the pressures placed upon these young souls, asked to embody ideals far too complex for their tender ages. One post haunted me more than the others. It was a long narrative Jennifer had written after the viral photo of Devante hugging the police officer had gained widespread attention. She described Devante as a compassionate, emotionally intelligent child whose spontaneous act had inspired millions. Yet, when I carefully examined the photo again, something struck me as painfully off. Devante's eyes held an unmistakable sadness, a look of distress masked as tenderness. What had prompted those tears? What had driven him into the arms of a stranger, seeking comfort so publicly? My search for answers took me down increasingly troubling pathways. One night, unable to quiet my restless mind, I began combing through older social media interactions and posts from acquaintances and friends from the Hart's past residences. Buried among the glowing comments, I discovered unsettling hints of past conflicts. Several posts hinted vaguely about incidents that had occurred years earlier when they'd lived in Minnesota and Texas. Troubling incidents dismissed as misunderstandings or exaggerated complaints from neighbors. Yet, these cryptic mentions sparked a profound dread in my chest, gnawing at me relentlessly. Unable to resist, I spent the following days tracking down old acquaintances who'd interacted with the Harts during those years. My conversations were disturbing. Each person I contacted hesitated initially, afraid or embarrassed to speak openly, but once they began sharing, their words came in chilling torrents. One former neighbor described how the children had frequently knocked on her door, asking for food, looking alarmingly thin and disheveled. Another former acquaintance recalled seeing bruises hidden beneath sleeves and timid glances exchanged between siblings, silent pleas for help that had gone tragically unanswered. With each new story, the Hart's carefully crafted facade crumbled further, replaced by a horrifying portrait of emotional control, starvation, physical punishment, and psychological manipulation. My heart ached with guilt, shame, and anger. Anger toward Jennifer and Sarah, toward myself for ignoring the early warnings, and toward a society all too eager to accept comforting illusions over inconvenient truths. I vividly recall one particularly chilling phone call with a woman named Melanie, who had been Jennifer's co-worker at a daycare years ago. Her voice trembled as she recounted Jennifer's intense need for control, her carefully hidden temper flaring whenever challenged, her pathological aversion to criticism or questioning. Melanie explained that Jennifer had abruptly left the daycare job after a confrontation about suspected mistreatment of her own adopted children. Her narrative filled me with sickening dread. Jennifer had fled repeatedly before, always managing to evade deeper scrutiny. Each move was a reset, a clean slate to rebuild the illusion anew, shielded by charisma and carefully curated images. As I delved deeper into their past, I uncovered police reports and CPS files from previous states. Reports described frightened children found rummaging for food in neighbors' trash bins, bruises suspiciously explained away as innocent accidents, and alarming weight losses documented by medical professionals who had sounded the alarm, only to have the hearts swiftly relocate before investigations concluded. It became agonizingly clear that Jennifer and Sarah Hart were adept at playing the system, exploiting its gaps and inefficiencies to maintain their secrets. Back in our own neighborhood, rumors intensified. Concerned parents whispered anxiously at community gatherings, asking uncomfortable questions that no one wanted to answer directly. A few neighbors reached out quietly to authorities, prompting a discreet welfare check from Child Protective Services. I watched from my window as social workers knocked repeatedly on the Hart's door. Their polite inquiries met only with silence and an ominously darkened home. After multiple failed visits, CPS left notes behind, promising to return with police intervention if necessary. Yet that promised follow-up never had a chance to unfold. Instead, under cover of darkness, the Harts fled once again, vanishing overnight without explanation or warning. I remember waking early the next morning, a suffocating dread enveloping me as I stared at their abandoned home. Had they sensed the growing scrutiny? Had Jennifer, always vigilant and calculating, realized her carefully maintained facade was finally unraveling? Days later, as silence settled heavily upon our neighborhood, the full gravity of what we'd missed weighed heavily upon us all. Community meetings turned heated, parents shouting accusations and demands for accountability. Some felt angry and betrayed, blaming each other for ignoring the signs. Others, like myself, felt profound shame for our silence, for our fear of confrontation and discomfort. In those tense weeks, I agonized over my inaction, replaying every overlooked clue, every frightened whisper from the Hart children I'd dismissed. My nights became filled with nightmares, faces of terrified children haunting my dreams, their silent screams accusing me relentlessly. Guilt consumed me, reshaping my once mundane existence into an endless cycle of remorse and self-blame. Even as weeks passed without answers, my obsession intensified. My life narrowed into a singular focus, searching, researching, and uncovering the painful truth hidden beneath Jennifer Hart's perfect digital persona. Friends urged me to step away, to heal and move forward, but how could I? How could anyone move forward knowing we had all willingly blinded ourselves to a reality so horrifyingly close? Every morning, I awoke consumed by an urgent need for answers, driven by both profound guilt and desperate hope that perhaps, somehow, the Hart children might still be safe. Yet deep down, I feared the truth that lay just beyond the horizon, a truth darker and more devastating than any of us could have imagined. We had all believed in the illusion. We had all chosen comfort over courage, reassurance over confrontation. And now, as each day passed without word from the vanished family, I knew, deep in my soul, that our silence had exacted a terrible cost. A cost whose full measure had yet to reveal itself, whose tragedy would soon plunge us all into unimaginable darkness. Chapter 3: Plunge into Darkness. The morning of March 27, 2018, began with an unusual calm, a deceptive serenity that belied the horrifying revelation waiting to unfold. I woke earlier than usual, restless after another night haunted by fragmented dreams. I padded softly into the kitchen, pouring a strong cup of coffee to chase away the lingering unease. Outside, a soft mist clung to the neighborhood, wrapping the houses in a gentle embrace that felt oddly comforting. But beneath the placid surface, my heart pounded with an inexplicable tension, a nagging feeling that something terrible was looming just beyond the horizon. As I sipped my coffee, my phone buzzed quietly on the kitchen countertop. Glancing down, I saw an alert flash across my screen, a breaking news notification from the local news app. With weary curiosity, I tapped it open, expecting perhaps another mundane update about morning traffic or minor weather disruptions. Instead, my heart stilled as the chilling words took form. Breaking news: SUV plunges off cliff in Mendocino County, California, multiple fatalities suspected. Investigation ongoing. My pulse quickened, the mug trembling slightly in my hand. Mendocino County? The name echoed ominously, stirring vague familiarity from conversations I'd had with Jennifer months before. She'd spoken fondly of California's scenic coastal highways during our neighborhood block party, reminiscing about past road trips they'd taken with their children along those picturesque cliffs. A sense of foreboding tightened my chest, though I dismissed the thought immediately. Surely it couldn't be them. Yet despite my denial, dread crept stubbornly into my consciousness, settling deep within my bones. Anxiously, I began pacing my kitchen, coffee long forgotten as unease coiled tighter around my heart. Driven by a desperate need for clarity, I quickly switched on the television, flipping urgently through channels until landing upon a live news report. The image on screen sent chills cascading down my spine. Aerial footage revealed the horrific scene. A rugged coastline battered by relentless waves, a sheer, 100-foot cliff looming high above the violent surf. At its base, barely visible against the jagged rocks and churning waters, lay the twisted wreckage of a dark SUV, partially submerged, battered, and mangled beyond recognition. Rescue boats circled helplessly, unable to approach safely due to treacherous conditions. Emergency personnel dotted the cliffside above, their grim faces speaking volumes, expressions heavy with sorrow and despair. I sank slowly onto my sofa, knees trembling as the reporter's solemn voice filled my living room. Authorities have now confirmed multiple fatalities following this tragic accident. Initial reports indicate the vehicle carried two adults and multiple children, identities not yet released pending further investigation. Mendocino County Sheriff's Department urges caution in speculation as investigators piece together the circumstances surrounding this heartbreaking incident. My breathing grew rapid, ragged, as my mind raced through countless unsettling possibilities. Could this truly be Jennifer and Sarah Hart and their children? Panic surged violently through my veins, fueled by guilt and terror that threatened to swallow me whole. Reaching desperately for my phone, I dialed a neighbor, Mary Thompson, hoping she might offer reassurance or clarity. "Emma!" Mary's voice cracked with evident strain, answering quickly, as if she'd been expecting my call. "Mary, please tell me you're watching the news," I pleaded, my voice barely above a whisper. "I saw it," she replied grimly, her words heavy with fear. "Emma, it has to be them. It just makes sense." Her certainty pierced me like a dagger. Of course, it made sense. This grim culmination to weeks of unanswered questions, suspicions, and unsettling silence. Still, part of me clung desperately to denial, unwilling to accept a tragedy of such incomprehensible magnitude. Over the hours that followed, additional news poured in relentlessly. Investigators released preliminary findings, each detail darker than the last. My phone erupted with anxious messages from neighbors, friends, and reporters eager for insights into the Hart's mysterious departure from Oregon. Helplessly, I watched as our quiet street filled with reporters' vans, cameras, and microphones, transforming our peaceful neighborhood into a frantic hive of speculation and sorrow. That afternoon, Sheriff Tom Allman stood solemnly before the gathered press in Mendocino, his weary face betraying the immense emotional weight he carried. With careful, measured words, he confirmed the devastating reality. At approximately 3:40 p.m. yesterday, an SUV traveling along Highway 1 plunged approximately 100 feet off a cliff near Westport, Mendocino County. We now have reason to believe this tragedy was not accidental. The absence of skid marks and preliminary evidence suggests a deliberate act. His voice cracked slightly, emotion briefly overcoming his professional composure as he continued. "We have recovered the bodies of two adult females, identified as Jennifer and Sarah Hart. There were six adopted children reported to be traveling with them: Marcus, Hannah, Devonte, Abigail, Jeremiah, and Sierra Hart. At this time, rescue crews continue searching, but unfortunately, we fear there are no survivors." My living room fell into stunned silence, the television's muted hum drowned by my own strangled sob. Reality crashed violently through my denial. Jennifer and Sarah had deliberately driven their family off that cliff, plunging into darkness, choosing death rather than accountability. The children, innocent and helpless, were betrayed in the most horrific, unimaginable way. Reports quickly revealed even more chilling details. Jennifer, driving the SUV, had been severely intoxicated, her blood alcohol level alarmingly above the legal limit. Sarah's body tested positive for a high dosage of Benadryl, indicating possible sedation. Investigators further confirmed the children had likely been drugged, rendered helpless passengers in this horrific act. As the gruesome truth unfolded, reporters descended relentlessly upon our neighborhood, demanding interviews, comments, reactions, hungry for answers to explain this unfathomable tragedy. News outlets dug feverishly through Jennifer's social media posts, holding them against the harsh light of scrutiny. The carefully curated images, once symbols of love and unity, were exposed as hollow, manipulative facades concealing a cruel and abusive reality. National attention intensified rapidly, transforming our once peaceful community into the epicenter of a national discussion on adoption oversight, child welfare, and social media's role in masking dark truths. Endless theories arose. Were Jennifer and Sarah desperate to escape looming child abuse allegations? Was this a final act of control, a twisted attempt to prevent their children from revealing the horrific secrets hidden behind closed doors? Haunted by guilt and regret, I found myself unable to avoid these painful questions. Each evening brought fresh revelations that deepened my anguish. Investigators unearthed past child protective reports documenting starvation, isolation, and harsh physical punishment. Testimonies from past neighbors and acquaintances flooded the news, sharing chilling accounts I recognized painfully well. Children begging for food, terrified whispers for help, bruises carefully hidden beneath long sleeves. Every revelation pierced me deeper, compounding my own culpability. Why hadn't I acted sooner? Why had I ignored my instincts, allowing fear of discomfort or confrontation to silence my concerns? I was not alone in these feelings. Neighbors gathered solemnly at community vigils, each struggling with similar agonizing questions, desperately searching for meaning or redemption in the face of overwhelming tragedy. At a candlelight vigil held near our neighborhood park, hundreds gathered, faces illuminated by flickering candle flames, tears streaming silently down grief-stricken faces. We stood united yet isolated by our individual regrets, quietly honoring innocent lives senselessly lost, whispering prayers and promises to never again turn away from signs of suffering, to never again ignore the desperate pleas hidden behind forced smiles and digital perfection. In the days that followed, I became increasingly withdrawn, consumed by relentless grief and guilt. The peaceful coastline of Mendocino, now forever tainted by horror, haunted my dreams. Jennifer and Sarah's act of incomprehensible violence forced our entire community, and the nation, to confront uncomfortable truths about trust, deception, and the devastating consequences of collective silence. We had all been complicit, blinded by comforting illusions rather than confronting painful realities. Now, our illusions shattered irrevocably, we were left facing a stark, unbearable truth. The Hart children had paid the ultimate price for our silence, betrayed by those who promised love, care, and protection. And as each day passed, the weight of that truth settled more heavily upon my heart, plunging me ever deeper into an endless darkness from which I feared I might never emerge. Chapter 4, The Hidden Truth. In the wake of the horrific tragedy, the carefully constructed illusion surrounding the Hart family crumbled away piece by agonizing piece, exposing the chilling truth hidden behind a facade of manufactured joy. The revelations came slowly at first, subtle disclosures leaking through news reports, official investigations, and painful testimonies, but soon they became a relentless avalanche, each detail darker and more heart-wrenching than the last. Days after the tragedy, my once quiet neighborhood remained overrun by reporters desperate to excavate every unsettling detail. The streets were lined with news vans and camera crews, microphones thrust into neighbors' faces, voices demanding answers, reactions, and commentary on a horror none of us fully understood. Anxiety permeated our community, tightening like a noose around our collective conscience, forcing us to grapple with profound guilt and unanswered questions. Sleepless nights became my constant companion. Alone in the dim glow of my kitchen, my laptop screen illuminated countless articles, videos, and social media threads dissecting every fragment of the Hart family's past. Each discovery twisted deeper into my gut, intensifying an unrelenting sorrow that refused to fade. Then, with heartbreaking clarity, a damning report emerged, a comprehensive investigation released by Oregon Child Protective Services. It detailed multiple incidents from previous states where the Harts had lived, each episode meticulously documented, yet disturbingly unresolved. As I read through the chilling accounts, nausea rose violently within me, forcing me to pause repeatedly, breathing shakily as the reality became impossible to ignore. The first report dated back years, originating in Minnesota. Officials described alarming conditions in the Hart household. Children found repeatedly hungry, thin, and frightened, begging neighbors for food and assistance. Teachers at local schools raised concerns after observing the children's unsettling behaviors. Scavenging from garbage bins, hoarding snacks from classmates, and displaying noticeable anxiety around adults. Yet, despite multiple interventions and inquiries, the Harts deftly evaded accountability, relocating abruptly whenever scrutiny intensified. Texas followed Minnesota, and the pattern repeated itself with horrifying consistency. Reports documented more overt physical neglect, bruises on young bodies excused as playground accidents, and disturbing testimonies from neighbors who heard muffled cries or pleading voices late at night. authorities attempted investigations, but again, Jennifer and Sarah slipped through bureaucratic cracks, swiftly fleeing jurisdictions before conclusions could be reached or definitive actions taken. My heart ached with grief and anger as I read accounts from a former Texas neighbor named Linda Garcia. Linda described how the Hart children, thin and pale, frequently knocked timidly on her door, asking desperately for something, anything to eat. "They looked starved," Linda recounted tearfully in a news interview, her voice trembling, eyes clouded by guilt and sorrow. "We tried to help, but they vanished before authorities could intervene." Each testimony resonated deeply, painfully echoing my own experiences. How many neighbors, teachers, and community members had seen these red flags, only to dismiss them due to discomfort or uncertainty. The weight of collective failure settled heavily on my shoulders, a burden of culpability that haunted every waking hour. As authorities traced the Hart family's tragic journey, they uncovered additional chilling details about the children's isolation and systematic deprivation. Jennifer and Sarah withdrew their kids from public schools, insisting they educate them at home. This isolation intensified their control, allowing them to dictate every aspect of their children's existence without external oversight. Neighbors and acquaintances in Oregon noted how rarely the children were allowed outside unsupervised. Their house, once a hub of apparent joy and community engagement, had become a fortress of secrets and silence. I began recalling moments I'd overlooked or rationalized away. Hannah's terrified eyes when she'd climbed my fence, Marcus's pleading whispers for food, Devontae's haunting sadness masked beneath the viral image of forced compassion. Every neglected warning sign replayed mercilessly in my mind, accusing me relentlessly, deepening my torment. Further revelations detailed the Hart's meticulous manipulation of social media. Jennifer, a skilled photographer and writer, carefully curated images portraying a loving, progressive family to thousands of followers. But investigators soon uncovered the stark disconnect between online illusion and harsh reality. Computer records showed obsessive editing and filtering of photos, orchestrated staging of scenes, and carefully rehearsed posts designed explicitly to deflect suspicion and reinforce their public facade. One particularly disturbing revelation emerged during the forensic analysis of their devices. Jennifer maintained detailed journals and digital records, meticulously cataloging her disciplinary methods. Cruel starvation, prolonged isolation, and harsh punishments cloaked under the twisted guise of parenting strategies. Her writings revealed a calculated awareness of how to manipulate perceptions, control narratives, and evade detection by authorities. She recorded chilling notes about how best to portray herself as a compassionate, engaged mother to outsiders, while privately enacting severe abuse behind closed doors. Authorities publicly released excerpts from Jennifer's writings to underscore the chilling level of psychological manipulation involved. Her journal entries detailed how she forced the children into prolonged periods without food as punishment for minor infractions, meticulously logging their weight and physical condition, adjusting their starvation just enough to avoid obvious detection. The details horrified investigators and the public alike, shining a blinding spotlight on systemic failures that had allowed such horrific abuse to continue unchecked. News coverage intensified, fueling national outrage and prompting heated debates on television panels and in online forums. Experts discussed institutional shortcomings, exploring how the child welfare system could repeatedly fail six innocent children over years of documented warning signs. Politicians and advocates demanded immediate reforms to adoption oversight, tighter regulations for homeschooling, and enhanced monitoring of at-risk children. As public scrutiny grew, Jennifer and Sarah's extended families emerged from shadows, expressing deep shock and anguish over the revelations. Sarah's aunt gave a tearful interview, confessing her profound disbelief and shame, describing Sarah as gentle, kind, and deeply compassionate during childhood. She struggled visibly, wrestling with how such darkness could have festered unseen for so long. Jennifer's distant relatives likewise shared their disbelief, remembering her childhood as relatively uneventful, though noting her intense desire for control and attention even then. Experts dissected Jennifer's psychology, discussing possible underlying disorders, narcissism, and pathological manipulation as potential explanations for her horrifying actions. Yet no diagnosis could adequately justify the magnitude of cruelty inflicted upon six innocent lives, betrayed by those entrusted to nurture and protect them. In my own neighborhood, painful self-reflection unfolded. We gathered repeatedly at community meetings, each neighbor grappling individually and collectively with agonizing questions. How had we overlooked so many clear signals of distress? Why had we hesitated when action might have prevented tragedy? Each conversation ended in tears, shared guilt, and solemn vows never again to remain passive witnesses to suspected abuse. Weeks turned to months, and the Hart tragedy remained national news, spawning documentaries, podcasts, and investigative journalism focused intensely on social media's capacity for deception and manipulation. Jennifer's once celebrated photographs became iconic representations of digital illusion. The smiling, carefully staged portraits now inseparable from unimaginable cruelty and betrayal. In time, the Mendocino cliffside itself transformed into a grim pilgrimage site. Visitors left flowers, teddy bears, handwritten notes, and photographs of the Hart children, memorializing innocent lives stolen too soon. I eventually made the journey myself, compelled by an overwhelming need for closure. Standing silently at the cliff's edge, the wind roaring endlessly through my hair, I felt an unbearable heaviness, sadness, guilt, and unanswerable regret washing over me like waves against the unforgiving rocks below. We had all allowed ourselves to be blinded by comforting narratives, seduced by illusions crafted by masterful manipulators. The Hart children's story became a national cautionary tale, a sobering reminder of society's collective vulnerability to deception, neglect, and denial. Their innocent faces haunted countless minds, compelling a nation to confront difficult truths about responsibility, vigilance, and intervention. Returning home from the Cliffside Memorial, I knew our community, and society as a whole, had permanently changed. The comfortable illusions we'd embraced lay shattered, replaced by painful awareness and determination never again to overlook hidden suffering. Yet beneath my resolve, the terrible weight of guilt persisted, a constant reminder of the devastating consequences born from our collective silence. The hidden truth had finally been revealed, but the price paid was unimaginably steep, a haunting legacy we'd all carry forever, etched indelibly into our souls. Chapter 5, Echoes of Regret. Years have now slipped by, slow and heavy like waves endlessly crashing against the Mendocino cliffs, but the haunting echoes of the Hart tragedy remain as vivid and relentless as ever, an unending chorus of grief, guilt, and reflection. My life, once comfortably ordinary, forever altered by a tragedy that wasn't mine by blood, but one that pierced deep into the fabric of my existence, has become defined by persistent echoes. Memories of faces, missed opportunities, and silent pleas that still resonate powerfully in the quiet spaces of my solitude. Each day, I navigate the crushing weight of knowing that perhaps I, along with others, could have intervened, acted sooner, or spoken louder. Done something, anything, to disrupt the devastating path that led to the cliffside plunge on that fateful March afternoon. The Hart children, innocent and betrayed, have become permanent residents within my thoughts, their gentle smiles and pleading eyes a constant reminder of the cost of hesitation, silence, and denial. In the aftermath of the tragedy, our community, once defined by camaraderie and easy friendship, was irrevocably fractured, burdened by collective guilt and mutual suspicion. Neighbors who had been friendly acquaintances now quietly avoided eye contact at the grocery store or whispered awkward greetings during rare encounters. An unspoken heaviness lingered, a shared understanding of complicity too painful to openly acknowledge. We had all seen glimpses, subtle warnings, yet we chose the comfort of inaction, trading fleeting peace for a lifetime of regret. Unable to escape my personal torment, I immersed myself deeply in advocacy, desperately searching for redemption, hoping that by raising awareness, I could somehow ease the overwhelming guilt embedded within my heart. My journey began quietly, volunteering at local support groups dedicated to child welfare, but soon escalated into passionate activism. I traveled frequently, speaking at conferences and community forums, recounting the painful story of the Hart family, and urging others to confront difficult truths rather than turning away. Each speech I delivered brought fresh waves of sorrow, reopening wounds barely scabbed over. Yet, beneath the pain lay a fierce determination never to forget, never to let society repeat the mistakes we'd collectively made. Audiences listened intently, eyes filled with compassion and shock, as I detailed the signs we had all overlooked. Children begging for food, quiet pleas for help masked by smiles, social media images hiding unimaginable darkness. Each presentation was emotionally exhausting but necessary, my penance for a silence I couldn't undo. Over time, my advocacy grew increasingly focused on legislative change. The Hart tragedy had galvanized nationwide attention, prompting public demands for reforms in adoption and child welfare systems. I collaborated closely with policymakers and child protection agencies, pushing aggressively for increased oversight, stringent home visit protocols, mandatory follow-ups, and improved training for social workers. Progress came slowly, often frustratingly incremental, but each small victory offered brief solace and validation of purpose. 2 years after the tragedy, Oregon passed Hart's Law, landmark legislation mandating stricter oversight and monitoring of adoptive families. Named explicitly to honor the Hart children, the law required rigorous annual check-ins, mandatory counseling, and detailed health evaluations for all adopted children. Similar legislative efforts soon followed in California, Minnesota, and Texas, states deeply connected to the tragic trajectory of the Hart family. Still, despite tangible achievements, personal peace remained elusive. Each morning, I woke haunted by memories, Hannah's frightened eyes pleading quietly for sanctuary in my kitchen, Marcus's soft voice trembling as he begged for food, Devontae's heart-wrenching photograph, his silent tears forever captured in viral fame. Their faces were imprinted indelibly into my conscience, symbols of my failures, reminders of how easily silence transforms bystanders into accomplices. Seeking closure, I returned often to Mendocino's windswept cliffs, drawn inexplicably toward the site of their final moments. Each visit was a pilgrimage, a sacred journey marked by profound introspection and quiet mourning. I spent hours staring silently toward the horizon, watching the ocean's relentless waves crash violently against the rocks far below, imagining the final terrifying seconds experienced by innocent children betrayed and silenced by those they trusted most. One particular afternoon remains vividly etched in memory. It was an autumn day, the sky heavy with dark clouds, wind gusting sharply along the coastal cliffs. Standing alone at the edge, a bouquet of white lilies trembling in my grasp, I stared solemnly downward, my mind tormented by imagined visions of their tragic end. My tears fell freely, mingling with salty ocean spray, grief raw and unrestrained as if the tragedy had occurred mere days, not years earlier. As I stood quietly, a gentle voice interrupted my solitude. Turning, I saw an older woman cautiously approaching, eyes soft with shared sorrow. Her name was Patricia, a retired social worker from Mendocino County who, like myself, regularly visited the Cliffside Memorial. We began speaking quietly, sharing stories, reflections, and mutual anguish. Patricia described how she'd spent decades attempting to protect vulnerable children, fighting tirelessly against bureaucracy and red tape, often overwhelmed by impossible caseloads.